Hey everyone, welcome to the Slice of Healthcare podcast. I'm your host, Jared Taylor. Joining me today is the CEO of MedBridge, Donovan Campbell. How's it going?
Jared, it's going great. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
I'm excited to have you here. Let's dive right in. Quickly tell the audience about yourself and then we'll talk more about MedBridge.
Sounds great. So I came to healthcare a little bit non-traditionally. I actually joined the United States Marine Corps right out of college and spent 4 years there and a couple tours overseas in intel and infantry. Got a business degree, got pulled out of business school, was able to finish it, but there weren't enough of guys like me running around in 2007. So I got the welcome back to the service, Captain Campbell. Here's a one-way ticket to Afghanistan. So I did a third tour in Afghanistan. And when I came back, I started work actually in consumer goods and Pepsi. And after about 3 years, realized that for me at least, I missed that mission, that sense of if I'm working with a great team and we're putting our best efforts towards achieving an end, I would love for that end to be something that I think serves humanity and advances, let's call it the torch of culture, the health and well-being of people. And as I thought about where can I find that outside of what I used to do, healthcare seemed a really natural fit. And as I have 4 children and I've got another one on the way, so, you know, my oldest is 18 and we'll drop her off at West Point in July and welcome my youngest to the world also in July. So as I think about telling my kids, what do I do and where's dad put his best efforts to, it felt really good to say, hey, I'm really trying to spend my time, my energy, my skills, helping my fellow man get better. And so that's sort of what led me over to the healthcare space from the military and consumer goods.
You must be super proud, West Point. Because I had a friend that went to West Point and he said, you don't go to West Point, you know, just decide on a whim that you're going there. It is a process of years in advance, you kind of set the steps, right? And follow those steps in order to hit that. So kudos, you must be so proud.
I am. I did not go to an academy. So it's a completely new journey for my family and myself. And I remember my daughter said, you know, Dad, I really want to go to military academy. I thought, that's amazing. You know, good luck with that because none of us have done that. And I would say that I think that was her sophomore year. And she really took that process and owned it and drove it. And you know, this is my first time going through this, but it's just really so gratifying as a dad to see your oldest set their sights on something and it actually happens, which was really, really great. Yeah, I am super proud. She of course wants to fly attack helicopters. So that sounds also interesting to me.
Wow. That's really cool. Wow. Okay. Cool. All right. Well,
I told her I was strafed by an attack helicopter and that was not a good experience. So avoid that if you can. Just an important safety tip.
I had a friend that was training to go into the Navy SEAL, to be a Navy SEAL.
Yeah.
And during the training, like he worked so hard for it, ended up breaking his back.
Yep.
In the training. Had to take, you know, a bunch of recovery time off, then went back and wasn't going to be a Navy SEAL, ended up becoming an Army Ranger for a number of years. And just kind of hearing, though, I mean, how hard it is to go into the Marines, to be in, like, it is so much work. So, you know, thank you for all that you've done there. That is not easy. And I'm sure some days what you've been through makes not to make what you're doing easy, but I feel like when you're able to do what you've already done on that front, it probably makes a lot of stressful days seem not as stressful. Is that fair to say?
It is fair to say. I will also say that human beings are infinitely adaptable. So you can adapt to combat and retain what's called your honor, your psychology, make hard decisions. Then you can come back to the U.S. and adapt right back to the convenience of life in a modern Western nation and get, you know, get really upset when your Amazon package is delayed by a day. So there are times where I have to take a step back and say, wait a second, Dono. Is anyone really going to die if you guys screw this up? Okay, no. Then it's all going to be okay. Let's keep our mind on what's really important here, buddy.
How did your military background, how does that impact your leadership like at MedBridge, would you say?
So, you know, I would say, first off, feel free to follow up with my team and see if what I'm about to tell you, I'm actually living, right? But I think my leadership training, particularly in the Marine Corps, has served our team and maybe the environment, our team and the environment have been in good set in a couple of ways. You know, first off, the Marines teach, and I came of age in an environment of highly decentralized decision-making and significant empowerment of low-level leaders to make the best decisions that they could possibly make in wildly chaotic and rapidly changing situations. So philosophically, we approached leadership or trained approach leadership with the idea that you should push decisions down to the lowest possible level in order to allow for maximum creativity and engagement with your team. And in correlation to that, you should have a very high level of trust in your team. You should reflexively trust that they have been trained, they have the right culture, they want to do the right thing, and they're skilled and able to do the right thing. So that's sort of one component of leadership, pushing decisions down, high level of trust on the team. As it relates to how you should think of yourself as a leader, we're also trained, and I think this is very effective, that the leader should think of themselves as a servant leader, meaning they are there to empower their team to achieve a mission that is bigger and more important than anyone. And it's bigger and more important than you as a leader, your own well-being, your own pocketbook, if you will, your own prestige. You are there to accomplish something that should be bigger and better than all of you. And your role, leader, is to make sure that your team has what they need to accomplish that mission and to put yourself behind them in terms of being able to ensure that they have what they need to achieve that mission. So a real servant leader mentality. And if you'll spare me 45 seconds, I have a quick story on that, which really brought it to life. So young Donovan in Iraq was a junior lieutenant. I was like 23. And the government had just fallen. Our Marine Corps division just set up in this camp called Hilla. And the commander of all Marine land forces was a guy called General Mattis. And he was brilliant. He later became SecDef. I had to brief him every day. I also had to man the radio at night because I had the, 2 p.m. to 8 a.m. shift. And whenever you got a credible Elvis sighting, which was Saddam Hussein, you had to send off either SEAL Team 6 or Delta Force. So we got one night at like 2 a.m. And, Lieutenant Donovan is really nervous about being a 23-year-old junior lieutenant sending SEAL Team 6 off on a mission. So I thought, okay, I got to wake up the general. And I all of a sudden realized, like, I don't know where the general sleeps. I have no idea. The lowest ranking Marine slept in a palace and was up on this hill because of the best protection from mortar. And the junior officers and senior enlisted slept in a canvas tent because we could pipe in AC into it. And so if you had to sleep during the day, you could try to sleep during the day, even though it was 100 degrees out. But I had no idea where the senior brass slept. And finally, someone said, hey, go check out the lawn behind the palace. Okay, I'll go check out the lawn. I went out there at 2:30 a.m. And there's 20 individual single man, 2 foot high, 3 foot high nylon pop tents. And the senior brass were sleeping on cots in nylon pop tents on the lawn by the Euphrates River. And I thought, this is servant leadership right here. The most junior Marines are in the palace and the general is in the pop tent. And, for that moment, I thought, I would like to be that one day. I'd like to be the guy who's leading in that way for their team. So I think that's the way in which the training has been helpful for my team.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the best leadership style that you hope, I guess, you wish you'd see maybe even more of. It's not as common still as it probably should be. You do hear the occasional, like the airline CEOs, like during the holidays, like they're at the airport on Thanksgiving and Christmas and whatever holiday, right? And they're there with people. Sometimes that seems more, they're doing it for the PR versus like true servant leadership, but I get you 100%. That's really cool. When you look at, so like, this is one question I always like to ask anyone that comes on. Like, let's go from just a high level. You run into someone, they don't know what you do. They've never heard of MedBridge for some reason, right? This is my favorite people to reach. What do you tell them as an intro to MedBridge?
Yeah. So if I'm running into someone on the street, what I tell them is, have you ever hurt yourself? Yeah, I have. Yeah, hurt your back, hurt your wrist, hurt your knee? Yeah, I have, absolutely. Have you ever been treated for that? I have. Perfect. So we are the company that provides training to generally 2 out of 3 physical therapists who are going to treat you. There's a high probability that if they gave you exercises to do at home, you've taken our exercises. And increasingly, we're moving to add, not just to that education, a component that allows them to issue you treatment programs that are much higher quality, that are AI driven, and that you can do in a way that is way more convenient and conducive to your lifestyle, in a way that's a lot more engaging, and in a way that allows your treating physician, clinician, to oversee your care, to know exactly what's going on, and to tweak that without you having to come in, or if something is going on where you do need to come in, to know that in the data. So there's this what we do component and what we are currently building and about to do component that I like to try to tell people.
And, you know, in the MSK space, there's you do things a little bit different than kind of when you look at these other startups and innovators in the space. You end up, what's it called? You end up collaborating with hospital systems. Whereas, you know, not to throw shade at anyone, but some of the other companies out there that they kind of separate themselves from the healthcare system. Why is that so important, first off? And I guess, you know, how do you see that? Like, what's the impact there?
Yeah. So first question, why is our approach so important? So let me maybe define the approach and I'll talk about why it's important. So our approach at the end of the day is to empower the existing clinical ecosystem to expand their capacity to treat patients of, you know, low or medium acuity, to practice at the highest end of their license so that they can let our stuff, our software, if you will, do the things that they don't like to do or shouldn't do or would be misapplied doing, so that they can focus on treating the patients who need their care the most, call it hands-on care the most, and doing the things that they really love to do. So that's our approach. We empower local existing clinical teams. So why do we think that's the right approach? Why have we taken that approach? I'd say a couple of reasons. One, in my previous business, we were a technology-driven services company, like so many of these digital point solutions are. Our current business, MedBrid, is a true software company. And that company was an expert medical opinion business, and we went direct to employers or health plans, and then they marketed to their members, and we tried to engage the population. And we really, really wanted to help that 10% of the people that every year had a catastrophic injury or had a chronic condition diagnosed that needed, you know, top shelf medical expertise. If we were lucky, we got 1% of those people to engage in our service, or 1% of the total population. Even after COVID, we saw rates spike up and settle down. Still 1%. And so as I came into MedBridge, I thought, you know, if you really want to have a population health impact, you have to align yourself, you know, one, with the way in which people want to consume care, and you need to intercept them in sort of the course of their normal care journeys. And that is typically they want to see someone. It's their health, after all. It is the thing that people pay literally infinite amount for. You know, second, I saw in my previous sort of business and after we acquired in that business that too often these point solutions had sort of walled gardens, if you will, of data. So they would have a whole host of clinical information that wouldn't get to that person's local clinical ecosystem or local treating physician. There's never a good way for that to be transferred. Usually relied on a human being making a phone call, which may or may not have happened. So that's the second thing. We really believe that if we empower local clinicians, our data is fully integrated in their data. They have a holistic view of their patient. So we want to have, we've taken the approach because we want to have a true population health impact. And we want to ensure that we don't have fragmented or siloed data, because that's a problem already. And to answer your second question, what has the impact been? Tremendously higher patient engagement than what I ever experienced in my past point solution life. So when our clinicians are recommending our software to our patients, we're seeing 70% patient engagement rate. That's crazy. And we're just getting started. So that's on the pathway side. Or on the sort of on the where we are going, our new product side. On our existing side, you know, we're seeing that our clinicians issue out close to 15 million home exercise programs last year. So we're really making a pretty substantive impact in how people recover from surgeries or how people recover from musculoskeletal injuries, if that makes sense.
Where do you see, with what you can share with us, where do you see the company heading from here?
So ultimately, at the end of the day, I see the company heading I would say heading into sort of a future where we are truly, our vision is to be the nation's premier provider-centric platform that combines care and education to allow clinicians to treat more patients more easily, the more engaging experience, and ultimately produce better outcomes like that. So that's pretty high level, right? So, but that is sort of at the end of the day, what we want to be in about 5 years. Specifically where we are going is we're going to a world where we are offering solutions in multiple categories. So right now we're really squarely in the education category. Physicians or PTs use us to get their CEUs every year. We're in the patient engagement category. That's at 15 million home exercise programs exercised. But we really want to be in the patient care category. And fundamentally, Jared, what we would love to see happen is our clinicians increasingly adopt, because some of them are there, sort of our philosophy that education is care, and that thoughtful diagnosis and treatment plans combined with thoughtful education, in our case, nano education when it's patient facing and they're going through these care pathways, is really holistic and robust care. And I'd love to see where our platform empowers, you know, so many clinicians that in some ways you shift the mindset from true care is only happening when there's a catastrophe and we're doing something big, we're diagnosing something big, we're prescribing a robust course of medicine, or we're doing a surgery, to true care is prevention. And that prevention is really comprised of really thoughtful treatment protocols and really thoughtful education, because education is care in our belief system.
And what do you see as some of the biggest challenges that still exist in your space?
So there are a couple. I would say, first off, there's the, let's call it almost philosophical challenge. And you see that prevalent in consumers or patients, if you will, and you see that in providers. And that was what I referenced earlier, this belief that if it's true care, it's going to be a big thing. It's going to cost a lot. It's going to be a chronic injectable. It's going to be a robust back surgery. So I think at a high level, and we can't, you know, change this on our own, but we can certainly help. The one big obstacle is just people's belief system that catastrophic care is care. Preventative care may be less good or less impactful, even though we know it's actually way better. I mean, the old adage, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, is very true. So that's one. I'd say more of at the operational level, what we're seeing is there's a ton of interest in this concept and in our, you know, new software platform. But because we are selling into the provider ecosystem, we're really needing to create a market for something that doesn't yet exist. And in many cases, because we're laser focused on that provider ecosystem, you know, we're selling to a fragmented buying group or to a buying group that doesn't really have yet formed its digital approach and its plan to execute that approach. So in addition to helping create a category, we're also having to help create not just how should you approach this category, but tactically, what are best practices to actually roll this stuff out to be effective? And in many cases, right now with their beta clients, you know, we're learning with them, we're co-creating with them. So I would say that's the challenge. It's less high level than sort of the philosophical worldview about what care or care is not, and more, you know, kind of nuts and bolts, day in, day out. Literally, how do you get people to engage in the software platform?
Well, I want to thank you, Donovan, for first off sharing some really cool, like unique story to kick off the podcast. That doesn't always happen. So, and I'm glad we were able to, you know, take that story and then relate it also back to you know, what you're doing today and servant leadership. Always, I know the audience always appreciates when we have those personal stories, right, that they're able to add, the guest is able to add in. And I'm really excited for you and the MedBridge team. I'm wishing you all the best of luck, and I really appreciate you explaining the differentiators and telling us what's next.
Jared, I appreciate you making the time for me. And I just end by saying I'm very blessed with the great team, and we are very blessed to try to accomplish a pretty big mission. Because if we can impact the care for 15 million Americans, we can make a huge impact in the biggest care category that exists, which is musculoskeletal. And that's going to free up a lot of resources to do other things.
I love it. Wishing you the best of luck. Thanks, Donovan.
Awesome. Thanks, Jared. Thanks for having me on.